Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. I'm your host, Rima Katz, Editor-in-Chief of Payments Journal. Today, roughly 30% of the global population sends or receives international money transfers. While cross-border payments have been around pre-pandemic, there certainly was a noticeable shift during the pandemic, and there's no doubt that COVID-19 accelerated the space forward by a few years. Our guests today, Hal Ramacher, Senior Vice President of Global Solutions at Brightwell, and Brian Riley, Director of Credit and Co-Head of Payments at Javelin Strategy and Research, discuss why integrating global payments solutions into product lines is crucial for organizations. They also talk about the opportunities as well as the potential roadblocks that many should consider. Hal and Brian, it's so great to have you with us today. Hal, to start us off, why should businesses integrate global payment solutions into their product lines?
Yeah, absolutely, Rima. And when you look at the industry today, you know, first of all, at a high level, there's over a billion people today that do sending or receiving of international money transfers. That's about 30% of the global population. It's really interesting. During the pandemic, we saw a very big shift in the digital transaction world. And for cross-border payments, pre-pandemic, we still had a lot of retail locations and a lot of cash payouts that were being converted into remittances. And globally, you still see a lot more checks for corporations being sent across borders for vendor payments and even for consumer payouts. And the reality is that the pandemic really shifted the world and moved us probably 5 years forward. And consumers really during this time also really changed how they interact with companies and with their financial institutions. And they're looking now more for embedded solutions that are at the point that they conduct business, whether it be in their bank accounts through their banks, or whether it be through a program managed payroll type solution, pay card that's out there. And the same for if you're working with a business, you know, working with the cruise lines and travel industry, if you need to do a refund to a consumer, they really want to be able to just interact that at where they conduct business.
You know, there's a couple of things about cross-border payments that are significant. And first, you know, you have two worlds. You have business to business to consumer. And those different ecosystems bring some common challenges. What you really need to make this work in the environment is having the infrastructure that makes all this work seamlessly. You can't have somebody trying to do a payment to a foreign country and then get bogged down in slow processing or ineffective processing. But aside from infrastructure, it's knowing your customer. It's an essential channel. You're picking up new risk. And even that leads into the third one, about the whole containment of fraud. So it's a massive area, but it's not to be taken lightly with some of the details that need to process. You and I talked before about Brightwell's foundation in the cruise industry, and that's a really interesting niche because you start thinking of how cruise ships work, the big companies, right? They kind of follow seasons throughout the world. So they're not just originating from New York or Miami. They're going to Europe and so forth. So you get into these incredible combinations of having to get payroll averages and what denominations. And it's really quite a fascinating space.
It really is. And you've already seen in the domestic payments world what has changed, right? You see the rise of Zelle, and that's an embedded solution for domestic payments that's out there. But I think you're 100% right. It gets much more complicated when you now try to expand from that domestic payment to an international payment, whether it be a disbursement from a corporation or whether it be a remittance from a consumer. Now, all of a sudden, you've got a more complicated network. You're dealing to over 200 countries in the world that have different compliance requirements and how you're sending those transactions and the data that's needed to complete those transactions. And building that network takes an incredible amount of work, you know, and if you look at the industry today, it's most of the consumers and people have been working with third parties. So they're going out to a third party app, they're leaving their banking app to go to a third party, which is not an optimal experience. I think as we look at Zelle and those types of embedded solutions from the consumer side, they want to just be able to conduct the business where they get paid. I go in, I check the balance on my account, I just got paid. Hey, I've got a family member in the Philippines that I need to send some money to. I want to do it here and now. I don't want to have to go out, sign up for another application, do a transaction through another application. And what's really interesting there along those lines, right, is you start to see that the banks can lose customers that way. Because when you start looking at what some of these third-party remittance companies are doing too, they're actually trying to build global banking apps. So they're actually not just pulling the user user out for a single transaction, they're trying to capture that market share. And I think that's why we want to also be able to enable the banks and program managers and corporations to keep that user in their ecosystem.
Yeah, of course. If it's a service that a financial institution doesn't offer, the consumer's going to need it elsewhere. He's sending money to his family in the Philippines, as your example does. And so do you risk having that customer go to a money transfer operator where they can get distracted by cross sells that are going to happen here within their ecosystem? And being able to have that as a service option is kind of a no-brainer.
It really is. And the interesting part, though, is a lot of companies don't realize how many of these transactions are happening. They don't realize how big the cross-border industry really is. So when you start talking about 13% of people, you know, sending money or receiving money, it's a large number. And you have to kind of look deep into your data to be able to see that. And you see it in, it could be your ATM transactions where money is being pulled out and going to a retail location that's out there, or it's just a POS transaction that's occurring. So it's interesting when we've looked at some key companies, some very large credit unions, and we look with our partners at the data, all of a sudden we're seeing all these transactions are there. So it becomes very enlightening to a company when they start looking at the data and realizing what is happening. And it presents some great opportunities.
Oh, sure. And of course, Brightwell's no novice to the industry. I know from researching your company that you've got customers in 140 different countries. So there's a good start. And certainly linking in with Visa Direct is the right kind of partner you need for the global exposure.
Yeah, we're very excited about our new partnership with Visa, as well as we also have a partnership with MasterCard. A good cross-border solution is difficult to create with a single partnership. You really need to integrate into multiple connection points, which is one of the things that makes it so complicated. You need to go out and, you know, have access to bank account payments. And like today, we do that to over 120 different countries globally. We also have access to cash payout payments to over 50 countries globally. With the Visa partnership now, that's going to increase into being able to hit over 5 billion card account endpoints, right? That ultimately lead into an account. And, you know, the hard thing is, you know, we've talked a little bit about what the benefit is. These challenges is the network, but then building those connections and building that network. In the last 10 years, we've integrated into over 6 different providers. And on average, that's a real drain, and it's extremely expensive from a product and development perspective. You take 5 to 7 months to do those integrations, and that's a hard case to build. And then once you start working on the integrations, you've got to deal with the compliance components behind it. A lot of heavy regulation around doing cross-border payments. And that expertise isn't based in a lot of the companies and the financial institutions today. So, you know, I think this is where you have to look at how do you simplify that? And then this is an area where we focused as, you know, we've taken our experience and said, how can we take what we have learned and our expertise and how can we apply that to the industry? And that's what we're doing today with our new ReadyRemit product.
Makes sense.
Hal, you've spoken about the rise of embedded solutions. In particular, how do embedded payment solutions drive customer loyalty?
Yeah, that's a great question. Number one, first of all, is it's always about stickiness. Anytime that a customer leaves your product, your technology, you stand the risk of that user moving somewhere else. You could lose your overall relationship, but also you're making it more challenging for your user because your user is telling you that I really want to be able to do this in your brand. I want to be able to do it in your offering. So by being able to go and embed a solution, you create that loyalty because the user's got a single place to go and conduct the service, do the cross-border payment. You've got the ability to make it a better user interface. And, you know, some of the feedback that we get from some of the third-party offerings is consumers still want to see easier ways to conduct the transaction. So by embedding, you can control more of the transaction. You can also now have access to the data so you can see how your users are behaving when they're doing cross-border payments. Where are they sending the payments? How much are they sending payments? Which really then also empowers you to be able to look, are there other products and services that we need to be able to do? So all of those benefits really starts to drive that consumer loyalty is give me everything that I want in one place, be a all-in-one shop, rather than having me go out through my entire metrics of apps on my phone.
You know, when you get into the social aspects of this too, it gets really, because people align themselves to the components of the products they need, right? So making my mortgage payment or my rent payment is kind of an unemotional experience, and it's just a function of what I have to do in banking. But moving $500 to my mother in the Philippines, your example before, you know, that's a gotta have function within a person's household. So it does really improve the whole stickiness of that relationship, where the household payment is a commodity item. This is a special item a person wants to do, and they're going to be doing it for years and years to come. It might be a one-off transaction that I've got to move money, $500 to the Philippines, or if I'm sending money there regularly, that's the kind of customer that has that long relationship that has the ability to grow. So adding it as a feature is really something that improves the overall stickiness of that relationship.
Ryan, I think it's a great point. When it comes to cross-border payments, you know, a lot of people think about it as, oh yeah, somebody's sending, you know, a Mother's Day gift or something to their mother. But the reality is understanding the cultural needs of your users and understanding why they're having to do cross-border payments. And in many cases, it's about supplementing and taking care of their family incomes. The family unit, although one person is living here, the rest of their family is still in the Philippines and India and Latin America. They are supporting their families back home. So it's much more core to basic finances. And I think that's where I think a lot of times we lose sight here in the U.S., is that we think about our users as they live here and they're just about doing U.S. business. In the real world, culturally, in the family units extend back home to their families. And that is why it's critical to be able to embed these solutions right inside the banking world. And if we switch a little bit to the business side of the world, as you know, we've been very heavily involved in the cruise line industry. And now we've seen use cases from our clients who have passengers who are boarding in from all around the world. And they have a need today to sometimes do refunds, courtesy credits back to those passengers. And in that environment today, they may still be cutting checks. But, you know, here now, all of a sudden, we've got Visa Direct coming on board. Now we've got the ability to push to a card. It becomes a much faster, easier, cheaper way to be able to do business. So now you've got a cost savings to a corporate and taking a refund and making it a better experience while you're also saving money. It's a win-win for everybody. So although there's a lot of consumer options here, there's also a lot of B2C optionality here in being able to push these payments, especially with push-to-debit opportunities.
Paul, you touched on this a bit, but as businesses begin to integrate global payments in their products, what potential roadblocks or opportunities should they consider?
Yeah, I think there's probably three or four that are key. Number one is if you're going to integrate it into your app, the biggest challenge you're going to have is actually being able to easily connect and the cost of doing that integration. You need to be able to find a platform like ReadyRemit. We've already done the work for you. We've done the integration into all of the best rails across the board. We've already simplified the experience. I'll give you an example. As I mentioned earlier, it's taking us 5 to 7 months per integration with some of our providers to bring the services up. We've actually managed to bring the technology and create APIs and SDKs where now clients can actually be able to integrate the service easier and faster in a matter of 30 days or 6 weeks into their solution. So technology, number one, and you need to find a creative solution to that. Number two, the compliance. You have to remember that these are not just domestic payments, and you need to be working with a company on a platform that can support and hook you up with all of the right compliant solutions. So all of the flows need to follow the remittance transfer rule. You've got Dodd-Frank impact. You have Durbin Act impact. You have Reg E impact. You have CBFPB impact. So there's a lot of work that goes into building a platform and a network of sponsor banks and regulated entities to bring a solution into play. And so compliance is a very big part of doing cross-border payments. So that's number two. And I think number three is that global network. And that's that there isn't one provider that you can hook into that's going to give you the fastest payments into every corridor, that's going to give you the best coverage globally into a corridor. So using an aggregation and embedded platform like what we do with ReadyRemit solves a lot of those problems for you.
I think it all ties back to the infrastructure that's important, and that I think you all have nailed it. The whole KYC piece, which makes it really effective and protected from risk along the way. And then the whole fraud protection that goes into it.
That's
and then
right.
Being able to bundle it in in with getting this up and running in 30 days is certainly a high point to the event.
Yes. Our philosophy here is we learned a lot in 10 years experience in dealing with the cruise lines. So over that time period, we've been doing cross-border payments around the world now for over 10 years. And with that, we had our own card program, right? We still do this today. Now, I think what we saw was that there is a need to enable other companies to take advantage of the kinds of expertise that we have. Because quite frankly, most of the companies that are out there are more about building their brands, and they have partial networks, and they have pieces of doing the program. There hasn't been really a great unification aggregation platform to bring it all together and make it simple and easy. And that's really what it comes down to.
You know, Hal, when you and I were talking the other day about the whole history of Brightwell, I thought was really interesting. You know, you started as a prepaid company, moved to Atlanta, and then attached to a really interesting but very complex industry being the cruise line. And then we have COVID. And, you know, when you look at payment patterns globally during COVID, big shift away certainly from travel and entertainment. But it certainly looks like you didn't have any idle hands there as you were planning for the next step with Brightwell. And, you know, getting into this ready remit process, I think, was a brilliant move and really ties to the whole effectiveness of the way that company's been built.
I really appreciate that. You know, one of our things is really focusing on our management team, great set of executives, and then we have a great set of employees. We have built a company culture that is focused on end users, on the users of the products, and understanding their needs and why do they send money and what are the cultural differences between them. And, you know, so basically what we've done is we've just taken the core learnings of what we did for one industry. And then as COVID came, right, and our industry got shut down for a couple of years, and we really looked at the core of what we were doing and what is going to change during COVID. And we saw digitization really start to take over, right? Users, whether it be in the consumer world or in the corporate world, we're looking more for digitized solutions and digital payments. We also saw the rise of the fintechs and the need for different companies that were all going out and looking to solve these global problems. But what was missing was truly this need of an aggregated platform. And that's where the idea came from. And I give a lot of credit to our CEO and our C-level, and then all of our teams, our product and engineering teams, who really strategize. We use this time to say, COVID's going to come to an end. We're going to come to a better place. How does the world change? How can we make a difference? How can we make the world a better place? And that's where we landed.
We sure did.
Hal and Brian, thank you so much again for your insights and perspective. We hope to have you back on soon.